Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Doc. Doc is our audience.
Emergency guest? Emergency guest?
You're our emergency guest. You're our audience normally, but here you are as our stand-in.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
Patty's on her way. I just spoke to her.
She's on her way?
She's 3 minutes away, but that was 10 minutes ago. Okay. And so she will be here. And
living up to her reputation?
The late Patty Fink?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't there a few things in the newspapers I didn't get a chance to read them about? That was DOMA?
DOMA, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is what we're supposed to be talking about today, but we'll see if we get to it.
Okay.
So, DOMA. That was a real interesting one. There was a good case of bankruptcy. Now, Patty just walked in, and now what have I been saying about all of these laws? The best way for us to get rid of them is the best way for us to get rid of them is through boring things like taxes, IRS, stuff like that.
Excellent.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean that's what I've been saying all along are the boring cases, and we always talk about this, and then Patty's partner, Aaron, texts in, this is so boring, would you please stop? But the thing that will get us is okay, so Monday,
okay,
a gay couple who's married in California, they file bankruptcy. They're a married couple. When a married couple files bankruptcy, you can't have the husband file one petition, the wife file another. That's not legal. Two guys who are married legally, bankruptcy judge rules that, first of all, there's no question that this couple is legally married in California because the trustee, the U.S. trustee, filed to dismiss. He said, based on you can't have two men file a joint petition for a personal bankruptcy. So he says he dismisses it, he says we want the judge to dismiss it. The judge not only rules that they are legally married. He said, you know, there are 11 reasons in bankruptcy law to dismiss, and the fact that it's two men is not one of them. Because when bankruptcy law was written, who even thought about that, right?
Right.
Word.
Okay. Yeah. So he said, not only will I not dismiss, but then apparently because this puts a greater burden on this married couple than it would on an opposite-sex married couple, because of that, which isn't fair, I mean, this couple's filing bankruptcy, and the reason they were was because of extended illnesses and extended periods of unemployment that were a result of illnesses. I mean, this is a couple who's been together for years.
It's a common reason people file bankruptcy.
Right, right. So we're not talking, oh, this was a, you know, extravagant couple. Huge hospital bills is the reason they filed, not to dismiss all of the expenses, but to reorganize them. Okay, so responsible bankruptcy that they're doing. So the judge ruled, not only am I going to accept this, but DOMA is unconstitutional. A U.S. court, you know, you think of a bankruptcy court as, it's a bankruptcy court that doesn't affect anything. That's a U.S., it's a federal court that ruled DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act,
unconstitutional. And 20 of 25 judges signed on.
In that court, followed it up, yeah. Yeah, that's a huge ruling that went under the radar that nobody reported on because it's boring.
Really. Well, at least it wasn't narrow like New York taxes, which is where you usually go.
Yeah, no, but it's one of those. It's taxes or, you know, or payments. It's money, and when it comes to money, those are the people who are against us. People do get it. Because you're putting it down to dollars and cents. You have a married couple. They file one petition. They have one attorney to pay. Here's a married couple. Whether you want to recognize their marriage or not, they are living together, they've been sick, they have expenses, now they have to pay two attorneys. So you just automatically double the expense of filing the bankruptcy. People get that. Now, some people say, yeah, but you should, because they believe in special rights for straight people. Well, that's what it is.
It is.
That's what Absolutely. It is. It's a special right for people who are... that's a special right. And I love that story because it's so basic.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm really, I can't even speak for it. I didn't really get a chance to read the whole article. Mm-hmm. It's just now that the way you place it before us.
But it's so obvious. DOMA is discriminatory, and that's what he says in his ruling. This is discriminatory, and therefore it's unconstitutional. And he cited several things in the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, several places where you can't discriminate against people.
Well, and in another ruling yesterday, was it yesterday? I believe it was, or day before, the federal court vacated the really stupid motion that the opponents of marriage equality in California filed to have the former federal judge who ruled in the case in California on Prop 8, to have him recused from his decision and have it retried. Mm-hmm. Their claim was that because he was a gay man, he would be unduly biased in this case. And I just love some of the things that the court said in this particular case. Walker originally, this was Judge Vaughn Walker in California, federal judge, appointed by President George H.W. Bush. In his original ruling, he said, Proposition 8 does nothing more than enshrine in the California Constitution the notion that opposite-sex couples are superior to same-sex couples. Hence the special rights, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ruling... by the upper court in denying this motion. The motion actually argued that if Walker and his partner ever wanted or thought they might want to marry, he, quote, plainly had an interest that could be substantially affected by the outcome of the proceeding. Mm-hmm. So that's why they were seeking to have him disqualified as a judge in the case. The motion went on to say, only if Chief Judge Walker had unequivocally disavowed any interest in marrying his partner, could the parties and the public be confident that he did not have a direct personal interest in the outcome of the case? However, this is just insane to me. It really is. And the Human Rights Campaign had argued against this, saying supporters of Proposition 8 are grasping at straws because they don't like the outcome.
Right.
If their real intent was to, quote, protect marriage, they should argue that a straight married judge be disqualified since he would conceivably have an interest in protecting his own marriage. The argument is simply ridiculous on its face. And I agree. I completely agree. So,
well, he went further and he said, because he used other examples, he said, if this isn't just about gay and straight, he said that would mean that somebody who is ruling something about the Catholic Church, if you're a Catholic, you'd have to recuse yourself. And I don't know if he used Catholic as the example.
Well,
he used religion as one of the examples. Yeah, yeah.
Judge Ware wrote that the presumption that all people in same-sex relationships think alike is unreasonable. Mm-hmm. He added, the presumption that Judge Walker, by virtue of being in a same-sex relationship, had a desire to be married that rendered him incapable of making an impartial decision is as warrantless as the presumption that a female judge is incapable of being impartial in a case in which women seek legal relief. On the contrary, it is reasonable to presume that a female judge or a judge in a same-sex relationship is capable of rising above any personal predisposition in deciding such a case on its merits.
Right. Let's take a Title IX case, and that's a case where Title IX has to do with equality in education for women. Things like sports teams. If you have a men's tennis team, you'd have to have a women's tennis team. If you have men's track, you have to have women's track. And you have to offer the same opportunities to both. That would be saying, if this gets up to the Supreme Court, well, Elena Kagan and Sotomayor and Ginsburg, they'd have to recuse themselves because they're women. How could they judge
Well, I think
this?
The men, see, I would equally think that the men would have to then also recuse themselves because, you know, it because does affect equality.
It does, well, and maybe they would too because...
And there'd be nobody on the court.
Well, they'd be ruling in favor of men, but men wouldn't see it that way. Men would see it as, well, no, because men should be the judges. So, just like, oh, and straight people should be the judges.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, that's not just that straight people would be the judges. This motion actually implied that because he was gay, automatically he's impartial and he can't follow the law. Something he's been
automatic. He's partial.
He's
not
partial.
Impartial. Yeah.
He's right. He's partial automatically, inherently, because he's gay.
Well, but
that's
what
just
it also,
insane.
What
to
it
me.
Also says is that. Being straight makes you impartial, whereas being gay makes you partial.
It's this black and white thinking that we see that in Texas attempts to change Texas law, mm-hmm. where it is for example in fostering children, where if you know the people in the far right wing, uber right wing, that would have all gay people banned from being foster parents say, oh, well, if you're gay, that automatically makes you a bad parent inherently. Something about just being gay can't possibly be a good foster parent. And on the flip side of that, if you're straight, automatically mm-hmm. you're going to make a great, you know, qualified foster parent. It's insane thinking. It's bizarre.
Right.
It's truly bizarre. They don't even see what they're thinking.
Right. You know, what I find interesting about that is to be a foster parent, the home is investigated. And, you know, if they went to your home, Patty, they would say, no way. If they went to mine, they'd go, oh, my God. But with LaRon, you know, with somebody like LaRon, who is not fostering, he had a natural child, with LaRon... the idea would be, you know, the idea would be, yeah, that's a great home for them, right? For a kid. So you have to investigate the home. By the same token, just because, you know, if you and I were married
heaven
to each
forbid.
Other, and it was a heterosexual home, I would think that a good investigator would look at our home and say, now that's even worse than what we saw before. Right? Not only are the two of you individually not qualified, but the two of you put together make that home worse. So that's just my point. But you do have to investigate a home, and with fostering, of course, that's a ridiculous notion that certain homes would be good, certain homes would be bad just because of the sexual orientation of the parents. You need to find the best homes for kids. And the reason that actually... Texas Child Protective Services has been going after looking for gay and lesbian homes is because they found a lot of good ones. And in straight homes, they've also found a lot of good ones and some bad ones. And they want to find the best ones because we have another 100,000 kids that need homes. And that's really what this isn't or hasn't been about at all. We have a guest.
We do.
Dave, I forgot to get your phone number yesterday.
Wow, you guys have a lot of traffic on this side of the Trinity.
Yeah,
yes, we do.
And it's going to be worse tomorrow.
I think they're all slowing down so they can listen to your show.
That could be what it is.
That must be what it is.
tomorrow is going to be even worse with the Mavericks parade. Dave Gaynor is with us. He is a board member of the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Did I get that wrong again, as I usually do? I got it right? Oh? I usually don't. And we're going to be talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And when I was driving in, I was thinking about that and thinking, well, if I don't ask and he doesn't tell, we don't have much of a show, do we? So we are going to ask. He is going to tell. And the reason that we scheduled Dave for this week and we scheduled this months ago was because we knew by the middle of June, Don't Ask, Don't Tell would be gone. Dave, what happened?
I'm not going to tell. Let's see, what has happened? I can talk about that easier than what hasn't happened. What hasn't happened is the repeal is not implemented yet. In fact, there's a move afoot in Congress to repeal the repeal. What has happened, though, in a positive sense, is that the military is ready, mm-hmm. absolutely trained, ready, and waiting. Hopefully, between now and June 30th, when Secretary Gates retires, we'll see some movement.
That's been my concern, is with the shift in, and I understand, you know, Robert Gates has been there for a long time now, as far as cabinet members go. And talk about a difficult, I mean, it's got several major operations going on around the world at the moment. And my concern was that if he should leave and someone else come in, that there would be this movement somehow to use that as some sort of a wedge to make sure that the other components that have to happen in the repeal process don't happen. Is that been SLDN's concern?
Yeah, it's a great concern of ours. And, you know, it's also an election year coming up, and the campaigning started. And if you listen to the Republican debate the other night, you heard Don't Ask, Don't Tell come up.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposition to the repeal, or the support of the repeal. So it's a major concern.
Well, one of the things that was advised originally was, if you're going to repeal this, repeal it, get it done quickly. The troops are ready. There's nothing to train with the troops. It's you know, there is some stuff that maybe needs to be done along the way, and along with the repeal. But what we learned from integrating the troops, what we learned from bringing women and integrating them into the mainstream of the branches of the armed forces, is do it, get it done quickly, because the anticipation, the talking about it, is more stressful than actually doing it. I mean, for two people of two different races to be working next to each other, it isn't hard. You just do it. And a man and a woman working together, oh my God, there's going to be this woman working here, and what do I do? And how, but then when a man and a woman are both working together, they're both competent, they're both they both know their job, you just do it. And two gay people, or a gay person, a straight person, working together in the Army, which they're already doing, you know, okay, now you're going to both be here. Yeah, well, we already are. So we're one step ahead.
That's exactly it. Now's the time to drop the order that says do it. You know, after a certification, which will be a challenge, as they present before Congress, after certification, there's another 60-day period. So at best, if we did it today,
mm-hmm.
We may have we would have repeal for the Alan Ross Pride Parade.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it that way. And that's a long way off still.
You know, one of the things I heard yesterday was the possibility that that Gates, before he leaves, and he's leaving the end of the month, that he would certify before he left. And he would do it for a couple of different reasons. One of them is because he started it, he wants to finish it. And I've even heard it suggested that he timed his leaving to when he figured this would be done. He can certify at any time he wants, from my understanding. Is that true?
That's true. After the military was trained, and after the regulations were rewritten and the processes were revised, he can certify. And Admiral Mullen is there to certify with him, and the president. Now, name one of those three that's not ready for this to happen. I'm waiting.
All three are.
So what is the wait? Why are we waiting?
Well, what is SLDN's position, if you're able to share with us anything, in pressuring them to do so now?
Oh, we have been.
I can imagine you have.
By the way, letters have gone to Secretary Gates, to the president. What's the wait? The discharges basically stopped last September.
But there just was one again.
There was
last
one,
month.
But that was, and without revealing the case, that was at the request of the individual, which made it a little different, I guess, in the Air Force's terms. I was very disappointed in my Air Force and that they were the first one to discharge since last September.
Mm. But we'll talk about that again when we come back from a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM, and we'll be back right after this.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BE. EYERImaging.com.
If you're going on summer vacation but aren't planning on taking your old car with you, why not donate it to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program? Just call 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll arrange everything from picking up the vehicle to providing the necessary paperwork. Your donation will help support KNON. 877-KNON-AUTO or on the web at knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink, and Doc was our top of the hour substitute stand-in guest host. Thank you, Doc. Our guest today is Dave Guy Gaynor. He's from SLDN, the Service Members Leaders Defense Network. He's a national board member, and he's our resident Don't Ask, Don't Tell expert. But he is telling, and he's been doing a lot of asking to find out why has this not been certified. When we first started talking about serious repeal last year, our question really was, what needs to be done other than repeal it, because they're not going to be doing something new. What they'll be doing is not doing something, which was actually part of the original law. The original law is actually called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue.
Don't arrest, don't pursue.
They were pursuing. After pursuing, they were arresting and throwing people out.
And so, definitely harassing.
And harassing. And all of that was not supposed to be part of what the compromise was when they came up with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So what is it, first of all, for people who haven't been following this all year, what is it that's taken a year for them to figure out that they needed to start doing differently than what they're doing now? And what they're doing now is there are lots of gay and lesbian people serving in the armed forces. The estimate is in the tens of thousands. They're there already. They're serving. In most cases, other than a few people around them who know, it doesn't affect anything. Where it does affect is the people that they're throwing out who have special skills that have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, in the millions in some cases, to train them to do, and they're taking them out. Now the new thing that they need to do is not do that. So what's taken a year for them to train themselves to not do something? I can't ask the question clearer than that.
I don't know if I can answer that question. I suppose let's rewind for a second. Mm-hmm. You mentioned those who haven't been following very closely for mm-hmm. a year. That's one of the biggest problems. There are biggest concerns of mine is the fact that people quit following last December what was going on with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They saw the votes. Everyone was elated. We had big parties. I got knee walking drunk in Dallas the night that the bill was signed. But now that repeal has not happened, our community seems to have forgotten the issue. They feel it was a big win, but it wasn't a win.
Because it's not done.
It's not done. It's not finished. And it concerns me that our attention leaves an issue and drifts off when the job isn't done. That's number one. Number two is I think the DOD didn't have a problem with implementing. They had the working group that studied the issues. They poked into all of the things that had to be changed. They have the regulations already written, rewritten. They've dealt with how do we bring these folks back on active duty? What's the process for overcoming reason for discharge codes? Will they come back in at the old rank? All those issues were addressed.
So there really were some issues that needed to be addressed.
Oh, yeah. What do we do with married couples that you were talking about earlier under DOMA?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with Dave that's married to David legally in a state?
Where is David? He poked his head in.
No, he's asleep. He doesn't. There's only one 7 o'clock on his clock.
Okay.
Anyway, what do we do with married people from a state that recognizes same-sex marriages? Do we give them benefits? Do we let them live in base housing? Do we let them use the chapels to get married in those states? Do we let them use a military chaplain for their ceremony. There are a lot of things to consider, and I'll give them that. But it's done. It's finished. It's ready to implement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with some of those things that they needed to implement, I have a problem with some of them, and some of them I think were things that could have been decided and discussed after implementation. In other words, they could have said, okay, Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been repealed. We are not going to be throwing anybody else out. And that's the main thing that most people were concerned about, right?
True.
Yeah, okay. So it's now other rules and regulations and benefits and equality status that we'd be giving some people, we're going to take 1 year to implement those and to discuss those and to decide. Why couldn't it be done that way?
Well, I have a friend, Stu Pearce in New Zealand, who was in the British Air Force when the European courts ruled that Great Britain had to do away with their form of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mm-hmm. He put it very simply. One night I went to bed and I was bad. The next morning I woke up and went to work and I was okay at work. They implemented it overnight.
Right.
Implement now, figure out how to deal with it later.
And that's the advice that the U.S. Army got from every other country who had implemented this,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And figure out how to deal with it. Okay, there are certain things that I can understand. Bringing somebody back on duty, is there a problem? And you've been on our show lots of times. This is your first time on our morning show, so lots of people are listening that were not listening.
Is this morning?
Then. Yeah, it's morning. Good morning.
I had to do that too, Dave. You're not alone.
You were in the armed forces for how long?
23 years.
And you served Air Force, right?
Air Force. Right.
For 23 years, so you understand the way it works, I would think. And after you left the Air Force, you continued working for the Air Force.
I worked for the Army.
Oh, for the Army. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Worse.
Worse.
but so that gives you kind of intimate knowledge of how two different branches work.
Correct.
Okay. So bringing somebody back on duty. Let's say they were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell 5 years ago. It's somebody in his late 20s now, early 30s, something, certainly qualified to continue a military career. Is it unusual for somebody to leave the armed forces? They were trained, they did 2 years of duty or 4 years of duty, left, can't get a job and decides to go back after another few years. Is that an unusual thing to happen?
No, absolutely not.
And how do they bring that person back on duty? Do they bring them back same rank? Do they need new training? What happens?
It's always based upon the needs of the service. Mm-hmm. You have to think of the military as an employer.
Sure.
Let me reverse things a little bit. Suppose Patty decided, I'm tired of doing this show after 100 years.
She's gone. She's gone. Goodbye, Patty. Nice working with you.
And she left, and she didn't show up 3 minutes late. But she left. And then she decided, you know, I really miss doing this show. I want to go back. But you've replaced Patty with someone else. Does Patty get to come back? Does that person get bounced? You have to think of it in employment terms. Sure, they can come back. They might not go back to the same desk that they had. They might not go back at the same rank that they had. And if there's no need for their skills, they might have to get different skills. They may be assigned to a different position. It's a big employment issue. It's not just a service issue and someone wants to come back. And no, Patty's not leaving, for those who think
right.
I implied something.
No, not
She's
at all.
She's not going anywhere.
And, you know, we've talked about this in terms of an ENDA, the first sort of step toward an employment non-discrimination policy in this country. And we see with our rights, you know, a lot of people get very frustrated because it's so piecemealed. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, incremental progress we see. But, and we've talked about this before in the show, like in Texas, they usually start with a hate crimes provision, some sort of law for that, and then we move toward employment protections, and then we get some relationship recognition kinds of things, you know, and it sort of moves in that progression always. Mm-hmm. And at Texas, we're stuck on the hate crimes provision. It's not even fully inclusive yet. Mm-hmm. So, but on the federal level, we have a hate crimes law that's been passed as of this president. And the next step is, you know, some employment protection. And the very first step of that is the sort of the military ENDA. We have this repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell that says you can be employed in the United States military without being thrown out simply because you're gay.
The nation's largest employer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But bringing somebody back on duty, is it a problem bringing them back at their same rank? Let's say it was somebody who was a sergeant. Isn't that just... Isn't the promotion independent of what their duties specifically were, their rank?
No, because rank is aligned by skill set in the military. I can have so many... I can have 1% of them can be chief, 3% can be senior master sergeant, 12% can be master sergeant. So there's a limit.
So there is a limit to the number. Okay, so he might come back
at a lower rank.
At a lower rank. Okay. And then.
And if David's employed here and he was station manager, for example, and he left and the station manager's already there, then you might be something else, but you wouldn't be station manager.
You'd be David the intern.
Yeah.
And I guess what I was asking really was, we're just ignoring these comments. We don't need you at this skill set, we need you at that skill set, but you were being paid as a and ranked as a sergeant. We can still call you that, but your skills are going to be at private, and you'll build up to it again, but you're not going to get more promotions until you're being promoted higher. Is that such a big deal or so unusual? But you're saying until we need another sergeant, we're not going to take you back
or
at that rate.
I need to recruit someone for a different position, mm-hmm. so you may change from communications to cook.
To whatever, yeah. And come in. Okay, so bringing people back on duty, there's a constant recruiting going on. We might not need you. You know, if you're coming back, yes, and we're going to schedule that you're coming back in November.
Right.
There's always that need for people in the armed forces, so that's not a big deal.
Well, we were talking earlier about you were saying that, you know, the discharge is the people we've lost because they've had great skill sets and or unique skill sets. Or much sought after skill sets, and I think just for the at large idea that one could be able to serve without being drummed out of the military simply because somebody, and you could even not ask and not tell, and not pursue or harass, follow the previous law, and still get drummed out because somebody, you know, some third party might decide they saw you coming out of a gay club whether they did or not, mm-hmm. and push it. You know, that sort of thing can happen. But I think one of the things that it strikes me the most is, you know, we do all these, DGLA does a lot of trainings at the Dallas Police Academy, and fire and rescue and such, and we do this little exercise where we just have a normal conversation with a coworker, and yet you can't reveal the gender of your spouse. And over and over and over, as we see in this exercise, people go, "Do you trust this person?" After they say, well, you know, they hem and hedge and that sort of thing about something. And you do that over, you know, one time, how about 20 times, how about 50 times or 100 times, 1,000 times, depending on how long you're working with other people. And it really does a number on that person and the people around you. And that's the biggest concern I have is the people, the everyday people, not people necessarily who speak a certain language or whatever that offer that in the military, but people at all levels, at all ranks, at all jobs.
Which is why Erin is at an advantage because she can talk about her partner, Pat.
Right, well, right. There's that.
That's a good point. Because even after Admiral Mullen made the impassioned testimony about this being the right thing to do, and he gave the testimony of honesty as our main core value, since December, our folks are still lying every day. Investigations are going on. I think there's you remember the old days of time management training in the C drawer? Mm-hmm. I think all the packages are stuck in someone's C drawer somewhere, but the investigations still go on. Mm-hmm. And the kids are still lying, and that's just plain wrong.
Right. It's wrong on so many levels. It's wrong to place people in that position that they're forced to lie every day. And for a lot of straight people, they don't realize what it means to have to lie to that degree. And I think if you're straight and you don't really get it, try not telling anyone about any member of your family, any member, as if you have none. Try it and see if you can get away with it even for a day. You can't. It will the stress that you will feel in every encounter because it comes up. That's the bottom line, is that it comes up. And so to deal with it on a day in and day out basis, on and the consequence of you failing at this exercise would be you lose your job.
Right.
Okay, so there are other things that they had to reconcile before they could implement Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they thought. One of them, and one of the biggest groups that was opposing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell from within the military, were the chaplains.
Oh.
And while chaplains from certain denominations had no problem with it, chaplains from other denominations had big problem with it. What was their problem, first of all?
Their problem, those who had problems had forgotten that they're supposed to be pluralistic when they become a military chaplain. The military chaplaincy has always been there to serve all faiths. You know, at Fort Sam Houston, when I was there, they built a mosque. The chaplains, the real chaplains, don't have a problem with that. Let me talk about one in particular. On Memorial Day weekend at the Cathedral of Hope, where I attend, for the last 5 years, every Memorial Day weekend, Sunday, we've had a chaplain, with the exception of 1 year, Reverend Joe had her dad as guest preacher. But we've had a chaplain there for the last 5 years. And they've all come from the chaplain's forum that's sponsored by HRC and SLDN. This year, for the first time, I think, ever, we had an active duty Air Force chaplain, Colonel Jeffrey Dahl, and his wife, Kathy, there as our guest and our guest preacher at the Cathedral of Hope.
That's fabulous.
It was. It was absolutely fabulous. And it was also the first time in 21 years that I received communion from an active duty chaplain. So obviously not all chaplains are having this issue. Now, Colonel Dahl is runs what's called the chaplains group at the Air Force Personnel Center. And he's responsible for the acquisition, care and feeding, the assignment, all the logistics that goes on with managing the chaplains across the Air Force. And, you know, Dave, I took he and his wife, Kathy, to lunch. David and I did, and Paul Dodd was with us. I took him to brunch that turned into a three-hour brunch.
Are the best.
Yeah, those are the best. And after a lot of politeness, I finally said, okay, what's the attitude in the Air Force? And he's like, there's no issue. There's no issue. And I asked him about the chaplains that are going to all mass exodus and leave because they can't tolerate it. And he said since December, he had one chaplain call him and say, I can't do this. He said, well, then you need to find someone who can. He said, no, I just don't want to participate in any of this. Well, then perhaps you should resign. So the thinking from this one of the senior chaplains of the Air Force is we're pluralistic. We're supposed to be chaplains for everyone, so let's deal with it and move on.
And you know, I could see on a base like Fort Hood, which is huge, there must be dozens of chaplains on that base. I could see them saying, you know, you're Catholic, I'm whatever, Protestant, and chaplain so-and-so might be a better chaplain for you to
Correct.
Speak to about this particular issue. But if you're in, let's say, Afghanistan, and the problem really has nothing to do with sexual orientation, because it's not going to in a place like that, when you know you have this small group that's stationed, and you have a chaplain attached, and you want somebody to talk to, chances are you're talking about something that's much greater than that. You just lost a friend. It has nothing to do with sexual orientation,
right.
and that's what really chaplains are dealing with. How did some of these, actually we need to take a break, but I want to ask you after the break, how did some of these chaplains deal with the integration of the troops? There were certain denominations that were just violently against that, and yet the troops were integrated, and chaplains now aren't arguing, yes, but I can't take care of a white person. I can't take care of a black person. That would be seen as unbelievable, but it's not that many years ago that they were dealing with that the same way. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
KNON 89. Democracy Now!, a national daily radio news program covering today's news and issues. Democracy Now! Is hosted by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, broadcast worldwide on over 900 stations, pioneering the largest community media collaboration in the country. Democracy Now! Can be heard on KNON Mondays through Thursdays from 8 to 9 a.m. Not the same old news heard everywhere else. It's news of the people for the people. Democracy Now!, Monday through Thursday mornings at 8 a.m. on KNON 89.3 FM.
Coming on Friday, June 17th, it's KNON's Knowledge Drop Lessons taught Easy ADD's Building Hip Hop Half Century Party benefit event. Easy ADD is turning 50, and he's throwing a party to benefit KNON 89.3 FM. Special guests will be in the house to acknowledge Dallas's first hip hop radio DJ, Easy ADD. Come celebrate with the man still breaking ground and building hip hop. Doors open at 8 p.m., ages 18 and up. In the mix, it's Easy Eddie himself, Spider-Man, Cutthroat, and many other special guest DJs. Live musicology roots from Melody Memory and more. The spot is the Green Elephant, 5627 Dyer Street in Dallas. Easy Eddie will be cooking up some of his famous jerk chicken for this big party event. He's done over 1,000 radio shows for you. Now come on out and show some love for him Friday, June 17th at the Green Elephant in Dallas.
Dallas Voice, a Texas LGBT media company, has covered news, entertainment, culture, and opinion in the North Texas LGBT community for more than 25 years. Every week, Dallas Voice reaches more than 45,000 North Texas LGBT readers in print. DallasVoice.com informs more than 170,000 visitors every month, with breaking news appearing throughout the day, every day in the Instant Tea blog. Dallas Voice is proud to support KNON Community Radio.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And that voice is the voice of Alex, who's in Japan right now.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Go, Alex.
Yeah. His partner, Michael, has been recording and...
Thank you, Michael.
...putting it on the web for us. So, yes, thank you, Michael.
You rock, Michael.
That. Yeah.
He's in Japan in the Air Force?
No, he's with UNT. He's studying Japanese. That's his major. So, we are talking to Dave Guy Gaynor. He is from the Service Leaders, Service Members
Legal Defense Network.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, you've been on how many times, and how many times have I screwed that up?
We'll forgive you.
Thank you.
SLDN.org.
Yes. On the national board. We're talking about the different issues with implementing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's only taken a year for Great Britain. It took overnight to deal with these terrible issues. With chaplains. We were talking about before the break, how did chaplains deal with the idea that you have to serve everybody?
That's part of their... acceptance process in the military, and becoming a military chaplain. There's a very formal process that they go through certification and recommendation by endorsers of their faith, a board that reviews their credentials and accepts them into the military. There's a school that's conducted on how to be a chaplain, and it's all about being pluralistic. And they sign up to that when they come in. I think the issue is, in some of their minds, I have a faith that says we should exclude gay and lesbian people as a whole. So that's part of my core values, and I can no longer overcome my core values and do what I'm supposed to do as a pluralistic chaplain. Go ahead.
But at the same time, if you have a chaplain who says, okay, I'm a Southern Baptist ordained minister, which many are.
Like Steve Sprinkle.
Right, like Steve Sprinkle. And we love Steve Sprinkle. But if you say, okay, this is my religious belief, and not only does it exclude gay and lesbian people because they're going to go to hell and they're going to, you know, they're doomed to eternity here, but every other religion, because they don't believe exactly like I do, is going to end up in hell. Every other one. Every other one.
Right.
Every Jew, every Muslim, every Buddhist, every Hindu, all going to hell because they don't believe exactly like I do.
No 22 virgins either.
Right. Right. And so all of these people I'm expected to serve. Why is it that they can somehow cross over, manage to work through their brain and their heart to deal with the Jewish people, with Muslims, with Hindus, with Buddhists, others, or can they? But they can't, you know, seem to be able to be decent chaplains serving potentially gay and lesbian service members.
Well, again, like I said before, talking to Colonel Dahl, he had one chaplain in the Air Force. So is this really a big problem or not? You know, if Colonel Dahl told me that I've had scores of them, they're, you know, they're going to run out, they're going to drop their investments and run out the door. He didn't say that. He said one Air Force-wide. So I'm number one, I don't think it's a huge issue. But the very essence, I think, of your question is, perhaps there are chaplains who are understanding of a loving and inclusive God, and they can minister to people of any race or any faith or any sexual orientation or even straight people. there are men and women of the cloth that are of that ilk, despite what their the creeds of their faith might be. They can still be loving and caring. And I jokingly mentioned Stephen. I love him too, but that's a good example. You know, Stephen could be a hardcore Southern Baptist, you're all going to hell, or he can be just Stephen, and he's just Stephen and a minister.
Which I think is fabulous, because yeah. To hear the Family Research Council tell it, even in the last few days, because, you know, I subscribe to this stuff, drives Aaron crazy. But I do, because you got to see what they're saying. Mm-hmm. They're saying there's going to be this massive, massive upheaval because it's such a huge impact to have Don't Ask, Don't Tell go
massive
away.
Massive exodus.
You know that people are going to leave and they're not going to re-up when it's time and
well,
you know all of this.
If you look back at history, who is the loudest voice that was against integration? In the 60s, who was the loudest voice before and after the Civil Rights Amendment? The Civil Rights laws were passed. It was the churches. It was we can't do this. God doesn't want this to happen.
And many of them Southern Baptist churches.
Well, I'm not going to pick on one faith.
I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, so I can say this.
But, you know, hellfire and damnation is going to come on the nation, upon the nation if we do this. And it's against God's will to marry between races and blah, 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 blah. So why shouldn't we expect that same voice to raise over our issues?
Our rabbi, somebody that I'm friendly with, our former rabbi, he is also a hospice chaplain, which is the same sort of thing. And he used to say, he's gotten very good at doing the rosary. You know, and we laugh about it a little bit. And he said, but you know, when I do it, it makes the person I'm working with feel better. And that's what's important. That's what it's about. It's not about my beliefs. It's about the person I'm working with. It's about their beliefs. Isn't that the same general principle that Army chaplains and military chaplains deal with?
Exactly. Or hospital chaplains or corporate chaplains today.
Right.
I think I told a story before about David and Hughley Hospital. David, I'll make it very short, but David was working up here. I was still in San Antonio. David wound up in Hughley Hospital through the emergency room, and I drove up from San Antonio. And, excuse me, when I got to the hospital, he had told the emergency room, my husband is coming, and told them his name, or my name. So when I got there, I didn't know what to expect. I've never been to Burleson, Texas before. and it's a Seventh-day Adventist hospital, and I didn't know what to expect. They asked me his birth date, and I gave it to him. They said, come with us. They took me up to his room in intensive care, gave me the little recliner chair and a blanket and a pillow, and I was well tended to by the hospital staff. The next morning, the hospital chaplain came through, and David was kind of drugged out, being treated, and the chaplain says, who are you? I said, well, how's he going to understand? I said, well, I'm David's partner. And the chaplain looked at me and says, well, how great a business partner would come all the way from San Antonio. And he looked at David, and he says, where's your family? He says, well, my sister's in San Antonio, my brother's in Tyler, and my husband's sitting right there. Well, the chaplain didn't know how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. I could tell. He was kind of nervous, and he left. And the next morning when he came back, he came into the room with another chaplain in tow, who at the second chaplain asked us questions like, well, when did you get married? Mm-hmm. Where are you all from? Can I pray with you? So he went and got a chaplain that understood and brought him back and let him minister. And I think chaplain number one learned a big lesson in that.
But he was never offensive in the first place.
There's
a difference between not, well, there's a difference between not understanding, not having encountered that before, and nobody blames anybody for that when somebody's respectful, but just it's a new experience for them.
Right.
But how great that was that he brought in somebody else.
And that
in itself shows great understanding, I think.
Right. Right, and that's the way the military chaplains are conditioned to be.
And I'm sure we've all encountered this. I certainly have, where people are very, very friendly, and they're smiling, and they're talking to you and everything. And the second they hear anything you say that indicates that you might be gay, facial expression changes completely.
Oh,
and they start backing away, and they want nothing to do with you because the judgment has just taken over.
That happened to me when I was a child. My mother used to say, don't stare. You know, I'd see someone in a wheelchair, don't stare. I saw a blind man, she said, don't stare. And I saw my first straight person, and she said, don't stare.
We're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the repeal, and whether or not it's going to be repealed by the end of this month when Gates leaves, because he seems to be the kind of person who wouldn't just want to dump something on the next guy.
And he's open to that. He's apparently very open to that, it in June.
He's been talking about that.
He needs to do it. I mean, we need to end this thing.
Now, what's been going on? We only have a few minutes left, but what's been going on in the last 6 months or so since repeal was actually signed? What is it that they're preparing the troops for? What is it that they're actually discussing at each of these meetings that they're having that everybody is supposed to participate in?
I think the very essence of their training programs, and I've seen some of their slides, mm-hmm. It's the same thing that we teach at the police department or the fire department or at a corporation. It's a celebration of diversity, and that's been a big thing in the military. We're diverse, we respect each other, respect is the second theme of their slides. There's no difference, and they cover some of the frequently asked questions that they anticipated. How about benefits? Are they going to move into base housing? What if I don't want a room with one in the dorm? Do they get special treatment? The same kinds of things that we discuss in training that's conducted that Patty does.
Now, most of the barracks are not the old-style Gomer Pyle barracks. Most of them, it is a private shower, or semi-private anyway. Right?
Well, they're typically the Jack and Jill, you know, two rooms with a shared bathroom. That's most
that
of
That one
them.
Of you use at a time.
Right.
Normally.
Right.
And that's been one of the big arguments against that, sharing the showers. And people are so obsessed with when they take a shower and not with doing the job.
But, you know, the bottom line is professionalism. At all times, if you're up to your job, you're able to take a shower and move on. You know, no matter whether you're gay and all worried and paranoid, or straight and all worried and paranoid, you should be able to take a shower and do your job.
So it's okay for straights to take a shower, but we're not supposed to.
Right.
How much of the training has been aimed at the gay service people, or have they ignored that they actually have gay service people now? In other words, here's what you're expected to do, the same sort of respect, the same sort of, or has it just been general ignoring?
I don't think our troops needed that training, and most of the training speaks in the third person of the gay and lesbian bisexual troops.
Well, I don't think there's needed any of this training either. I think they should have, you know, like the way I asked the question at the beginning is how I really meant it. How much training do you need to do to not do something anymore? Because they're not going to be doing something new. They're going to not be doing something that they shouldn't have been doing in the first place.
Well, it's not a conduct law anyway. I mean, you know, conduct has, I'm sure, has its own regulations.
True.
The mere fact that you reveal that your sexual orientation is not heterosexual, in other words, you know, that's, to me, that's not conduct. That's not any sort of conduct that merits any sort of training. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's very true. I mean, what is the training need? And there really isn't one. It was more of an announcement that we're doing this than it was training.
And it took 6 months to announce it.
There's a lot of people to announce it to.
But just picture this. If Gates signs off and McMullen signs off and President Obama signs off in June, wow, in June is Pride Month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty cool. And it won't go into effect until really September. So
and we can celebrate.
We can finally have our Pride in Dallas make sense to everybody for a new reason.
Dave Geigainer, I want to thank you for being here, talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You'll be back.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Once this is implemented, you'll come back. You'll talk about all of the horrible things that have happened in our armed forces, how many people have had to leave, and how it's disrupted everybody's life, and what a mess it's been. It'll be a very, very short show.
when repeal is implemented, I'll tell.
You'll tell. This is the part of our show where our producer, Thomas Pearson, comes in and disavows any knowledge of our existence. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Our guest next week is a friend of mine who I found. She found me on Facebook. We haven't spoken in more than 40 years. She's a guest house owner in Provincetown now.
P-Town.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.
Thank you for listening to the KNON Morning Line. We'd like to remind you that the views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNON 89.3 FM.